I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the One Up podcast. I'm your host, Guy Drinkle, and today I am joined by one of our previous guests from the First Person Shooter pod. And no, it's not a Call of Duty pod, so it's not Leroy. It is Marco Lopez. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, mate. How are you doing?
I am excellent, excellent. It's that time of year. It's Christmas, there's time off, people are more available for pods, it's great. But don't know when they're gonna be released.
And there's Steam sales. Of course. And there's Steam sales, good movies, all sorts of crazy end of year retail discounts to take advantage of as well.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, when the January sales hits, that's when games like Watch Dogs 2 get bought, Dead Rising 4. It's a great time. but today I've got Marco here to talk about the flavour of the month, so to speak. Obviously, Star Wars Rogue One was released last week. We have both seen the film. We won't say any spoilers, but Marco, did you enjoy it?
I absolutely thoroughly loved it. It's my favourite film of the year, which is saying something, considering my comic pod colleagues will be quite disappointed to hear me say that. And I consider this, I was that impressed that I consider this to be the second best Star Wars film. I really, really liked it. I think there's just so much they do right, and as a film, it's just incredible. But I don't want to say too much because then I'll immediately start spoiling and steal the pot today.
All right. Just a quick spoiler, the Ewoks win. but yes, it was a great film. If you haven't seen it, we're not going to spoil it here for you, but do go watch that film. It is fantastic, and I agree, it's only seconded to number 5, which was a work of art. But yes, Star Wars, obviously it's made a huge impact. It's probably the most popular film series ever. Oh, it's certainly in the conversation. But in terms of video games, Marco, does it have a similar impact, do you think? Does it have an importance on video gaming history?
I think it's not necessarily sort of something that defines, like, you don't have a lot of Star Wars games that have necessarily defined some of the culture, in the sense that, you know, you might have a lot of games that have come in and maybe redefined a genre, or they've redefined certain game mechanics, or whatever the case may be. But I think what's interesting about what Star Wars has done is it's managed to keep a relevance right up until its early games, which started in the 80s, and I'm far too, even that's way too long ago for me to have played them. But what's interesting is, I guess the interesting dynamic around what Star Wars has done is, because of the universe, because of the way the universe works, a lot of its games either, you know, sort of stick to the core stories or themes coming from the films, and it might be retellings of the films. So you might play Star Wars The Phantom Menace game, and it literally is the events of the film in game form. But then you'll get other things like Oh, yes. And then you might get other things that are offshoots, things like Republic Commando, which is set during the Clone Wars but tells a story on the side. Or you might even get something which we have to spend a lot of time on, of course, something called Knights of the Old Republic, which tells a Star Wars story in the universe, but it goes to completely different time, completely different places, completely different characters, but it's just as compelling and just as interesting. So I guess it's about the fact that the universe can pretty much set itself anywhere and across so many different genres. And that's what probably makes it quite interesting how Star Wars games have worked over the years.
It is. It's one of those things that's always going to sell. If they're always going to be a good game, that's maybe in question more recently than we've seen in the past. I think we had a Kinect game. Agreed. For Xbox One where you had a lightsaber, which was pretty crap. And the newest Battlefront is, we won't go into too much detail on it. So I know Marco hasn't played it, but it was just lacking something. It didn't feel that special, especially when you're considering that this is the same company that made Battlefield, especially Battlefield 1, which is fantastic. But yeah, Battlefront has something missing. It seems like it's too tethered to the films, and it's kind of limited itself in terms of its meh. And you kind of see Princess Leia being able to batter Darth Vader, which is kind of weird. But anyway, we'll move on from Battlefront. Well, the newest Battlefront. We'll talk about the other two, because they are fantastic. I just want to do a quick comparison, because obviously you mentioned that Phantom Menace is basically just Phantom Menace, which is a crap film, apart from the last few scenes. And Podracing. I like Podracing. But if we compare Phantom Menace, which was kind of... I was pretty young, as I said to Marco before we started the recording. I was 5 when Phantom Menace came out, and I can't remember how old I was when I played the game, but it must have been a couple of years do that. And as I said, the Gungan map, I think that was probably the first time I broke a controller. But Marco, obviously seen Phantom Menace, it was kind of a weird game. And then we had later, a few years later down, when, probably in the two generations of consoles later, we had Force Unleashed, which kind of modernized the Star Wars video game brand. It was something different, something new. So what do you prefer personally? Something that sticks to the films or something that goes completely away from it?
I think a lot of it depends on what it's trying to do, because my memory is a bit longer, so I'll throw a couple of other curveballs at you. The reason I probably, if I had to stick my neck out, I prefer something that sort of isn't set to the films per se, is because, as an example, if you've had the opportunity to play Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2, exceptional game because of the fact that it's set about a year after the events of Episode 6 insofar as films are concerned. And it obviously tells a very different story, and it introduces and embellishes on characters introduced in the first Dark Forces. And it's a very compelling story. And it's the first time that you actually get the chance to sort of craft and build a Jedi, which I think as a game mechanic is something that the developers of all these games have done, you know, mixed success. If you're talking about a faithful retelling of like what you see in the films, I actually would like to pick out a game called X-Wing Alliance, which a lot of people haven't necessarily been able to pick up and play. But one of the cool things about that is it starts off, you know, sort of telling these side stories, but eventually it culminates in you being one of the pivotal players in that massive fight at the end of Episode 6. And in that game, you fly everything. If you want to fly a TIE fighter or a TIE bomber or a TIE interceptor, or you want to fly an X-Wing, B-Wing, A-Wing, the Millennium Falcon, whatever you want to fly, you can fly it. I think the only thing you can't fly is like a Star Destroyer, because, you know, it's a Star Destroyer. that's sort of a faithful retelling. But if I look at the games that I've enjoyed the most, in terms of staying faithful to the material or telling a separate story in the universe, Republic Commando, Knights of the Old Republic, even Battlefront, which, you know, funnily enough, Battlefront 1 and 2 do, and I'm talking about the original ones here, not the relaunch that we obviously had last year.
The crap one.
they, What they do is they do obviously mirror a lot of the core fights and the core moments from the films, but they've also managed, especially Battlefront 2, managed to bring in a couple of, you know, some of the other planets, some of the other worlds, and that was actually pretty cool. It was actually sort of brought a whole different dynamic. So I guess, you know, for me, I like the modernization, obviously, because, you know, as the technology improves, it's great to see this stuff come alive in a slicker way. But I think it's more important to get the story right and to get the concept right. Because even though, for example, Knights of the Old Republic is, 13 years old now? It's still an exceptionally good game.
Jesus.
and well better than most RPGs you'll play now.
100%.
Does that make sense?
100%. Is it one of the most underrated games going? It must be. It's a classic. I mean, I was I must have been about 9 or 10, and I couldn't put that game... I never finished it. I couldn't put that game down, though. It pissed me off no end. But it just grabbed me. I mean, just wandering on that game. I mean, just the ability to wander around in the Star Wars universe, I think... That's what people really want from the Star Wars universe. And I think Knights of the Old Republic kind of did that. Obviously, there is the MMO RPG version, the old Knights of the Republic, or whatever it's called, which I have not played because I did the whole World of Warcraft thing, and I can't be asked to win another one. but yeah, Knights of the Old Republic is special. But if we go into that more... on more detailed. I said I didn't really finish it, but obviously they had a sequel as well. What made Knights of the Old Republic special? I mean, could you want to just dive into the story a little bit? Because I can't remember lots of it myself.
So what they did with Knights of the Old Republic is they basically took a storyline that starts 4,000 years before Episode 1. And episode 1 of 4, I can't recall exactly. And effectively what they do is they talk about a period in time where there's a lot of Sith and a lot of Jedi. And it's intriguing how the game starts, because as usual it does that whole trope where, you know, you wake up and you cannot remember who you are and amnesia and all those good things. But what becomes intriguing about the game from a story perspective is the fact that slowly but surely, they introduce all these really compelling characters. You find out you're mixed up in what is a sort of an undercurrent to a larger war between the Republic at the time and this growing Sith threat led by a nasty guy called Darth Malak, who's got a whole Darth Vader vibe going with a visor over his mouth. And then this mythical other Sith Lord called Darth Revan, who no one knows where he or she has gone. They don't even, you know, they don't know what's happened to Revan. And effectively, you become embroiled in this bigger fight because of the characters introduced. And I think two things are really sort of highlight why this game landed so well and sort of brought to the consciousness, because the only game that had come out before where you'd sort of crafted a Jedi and started like saying, okay, well, this is now you building a lightsaber, this is now you choosing which force powers you want, blah blah blah, as you craft it, is kind of the Dark Forces games or the Jedi Knight games. But this now obviously brought in an RPG element, so there was a lot more character development. There was a lot more interaction with other people in the world. You met different characters. You went to other worlds as well, which you mentioned talking about exploring. And eventually, as the story developed, it was just so well written. And as the story became, as you got into it, you just eventually started finding all these different twists and turns because of also the way the characters would react to you. There's some characters who straight out will just not engage with you very well, depending on how you choose to react to certain situations. Eventually, you start crafting yourself as a Jedi, and if you choose to be sort of a light side of Jedi or a dark side of Jedi, you're going to have different core relationships, and you may find like it's quite interesting to have you know, useful character X who doesn't like you because you're on the dark side. Similarly, I mean, some of those other characters, it's funny. In the new movie, there's a very special new droid, which, and I'll leave it at that, but that special new droid is not my favorite droid in the Star Wars universe. My favorite droid in the Star Wars universe is HK-47 from Knights of the Old Republic, because that is the funniest, most crazy, hilarious, and damn downright violent droid I've ever seen in the game. I still call people organic meatbag to this day, if I want to be snide, because that's sort of how he references you in the game, which is really, really funny. And it's just, it's those little things. It was just such a beautifully, wonderfully, amazingly crafted RPG. And it's kind of, you know, the stuff of dreams at the time of how a Star Wars RPG should be built.
Mm. Now, did the sequel live up to the first one? If you've played it,
it didn't. But I think to some extent, dude, that's like comparing, you know, a great game to a good game. Knights of the Old Republic 2 is a good game, and I actually think in many ways it's got a far more interesting and compelling villain than Knights of the Old Republic 1. It doesn't have the same twist. Oh, by the way, let me just say the twist in the first Knights of the Republic is insane. It is the most, and it's one of the reasons I wish they'd do a movie. They won't, though, because it's not considered canon, but the twist is absolutely mind-boggling. I never saw it coming.
We need a fan-made film. ASAP.
Yes. Oh, yes, I've seen it. I've actually seen it. It's somewhere on YouTube. I need to actually watch it. I've seen the link to it.
Yeah. There is a Darth Maul film.
So Knights of
Sorry.
Yes, also I've seen that as well. No stress. So, but Knights of the Republic 2, look, the mechanics were there, they improved some of the gameplay elements as well, but the story just wasn't as tight, as compelling.
Mm.
Different developer as well, because it went from BioWare to Obsidian, and I just think BioWare are far better storytellers than Obsidian, but it still was a very good game.
Yeah, I think anyone would struggle to take a BioWare game off BioWare and try to build off it. I mean, BioWare's special. I mean, look at Mass Effect, look at Dragon Age. All fantastic. But yeah, we'll move on from Knights of the Old Republic, because it's fantastic, and hopefully it's continued or redone in some sense by BioWare. But we'll talk about Battlefront a little bit, as I've said about the new one. It's not great, but we'll only touch on this a little bit, because it's first-person shooter as well. But was the first two special? Because you could literally... It was so easy to just jump in as a Jedi or a Sith, and then you felt like you were one of them. I mean, when you played as Yoda on one of them, it was just insane. And when you played as Darth Vader, it was like, oh my god,
he
could actually take over the universe, which he actually did. And that, I think that's what made it so special. I mean, you could literally fly with Darth Vader just because he could jump. It was so good.
Yes, I remember that.
But obviously you've mentioned in previous pods, you're not one for the classic first-person shooters. But is this a classic first-person shooter, or is this just the perfect blend of story and first-person shooter set in such a brilliant cinematic universe?
I think it's more the latter, and I think, you know, especially Battlefront 2. The key thing for me, what makes the game so cool, is just the fact that there's a lot of variety to the gameplay. So you're not going to have the situation where yes, you can play it as a straight-up first-person shooter, and all that works. And the nice thing is the game is able to settle this different variety. So if you wanted to play as a Trade Federation droid in first person, you can. If you want to play as a Stormtrooper sniper set during the Empire, you can. If you want to, you know, sort of mix it up, you can do that. But at the same time, it's a different game modes, because the single player component there is actually really good, and there's a very good campaign behind it. But then obviously the multiplayer is also very layered, and all those different modes between capture the flag and capturing specific spots, or just, you know, sort of straight out death matches available. But then also the fact that they were clever enough to also think about almost using those core characters as generals. So what would happen is the game had this cool feature where if you racked up, especially if you're playing in multiplayer, if you racked up enough points, or enough kills rather, you'd then earn the right to bring on one of those bigger characters onto the field, as it were.
Yes.
And I mean, this was everybody. This was not just Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker. It was General Grievous. Now, that's an insane character to use because
he was so good.
Good fun. Obi-Wan Kenobi, you had Han Solo, Chewbacca, Yoda. You could play as the Emperor, for goodness sake. So all these different elements, which was just so cool. I mean, I think they kind of understood the fan service that they were trying to achieve, and just made a really insanely fun arcade-y style third person or first person shooter, and that's why it landed for me, and I almost get the feeling that maybe to some extent what the new one failed to do is kind of remember that's the core of what, I mean, the new one looks cool, but it doesn't play cool, if that makes sense.
That is pretty much spot on. It plays like, I don't want to say Battlefield in a Star Wars skin, because I don't think it is. It just feels like it's too serious for what Star Wars is. I mean, Stormtroopers and Clone Troopers in the Star Wars universe are pretty much just in the story to die. That's their job. Yet on this, they seem in the new one, they seem too strong. I mean, like, you can kind of not hold your own with Darth Vader, but if you get Darth Vader out range on the new one, you can fight Darth Vader as a stormtrooper. It's like, no, you can't fight him. Or not Darth Vader, probably Luke Skywalker. Getting me sides mixed up. But yeah, it just feels like it's tethered too much to the cinematic universe in terms of characters and setting. But it feels like it just feels like a general shooter when you realise what you're fighting against. I mean, it doesn't really sell Darth Vader as this bloke who's conquered the universe, as I said, with the with Battlefront 2, where you could literally fly and you could like kill everything in sight unless you came up against another Jedi. But on this, it's too easy to get beat by something stupid. And like, I mean, like, you can have a fist fight with Han Solo. I mean, it's just a bloke. It's just a bloke. it's not the same. I don't want Darth Vader could battle Leia with like just blinking at her.
In fact, given it's a spoiler. I can't say it. I was going to say something about the new movie, but I can't say it. Okay. But I think you know what I'm referring to. Yeah.
Is it one of the later scenes?
Yes. And it just totally evidences what you just said.
Yeah, you don't piss off.
But yeah, I mean, no, you don't. You don't. And you certainly don't. Well, what was I going to say? Battlefront, funny enough, the older ones had those funny moments and it made sense. Like, you might like respawn and in an accidental moment right in front of one of those like really large Trade Federation tanks and get like blown off. That makes sense. That made total sense. But getting out punched in a fist fight between Han Solo and Darth Vader, if you're Darth Vader, doesn't sound right.
Oh, it was just annoying, and there was no story. I mean, it's a Star Wars game without a story. I mean, everyone knows the Star Wars story, but we want to play the story, man. It's got the characters. Agreed. We want to play as it, and then which I think they've announced that on Battlefront, I don't know what if they're going to call it 2 or 2.1 or something, just to get rid of confusion. But the new one that will probably come out in the next few years is going to have single player, so hopefully they listen to the fans, which seems to be one of the bugbears that fell out from the last one. But Marco, shall we move on to the game that never was?
Yes. Big sore pointers.
Ah. It looks so perfect, and there was not much to look at, but 1313, it looks like that you played as either Boba Fett or a bounty hunter, which sounds freaking awesome. There isn't much footage. I mean, there was screenshots. I think there was screenshots at the same time Battlefront was being made, and I think it kind of got lost in the pack when EA got the license in 3 or 4 years ago, I think. So it kind of got lost, and I think it just kind of fell when they were when the licenses swapped. But 1313, Marco, what were your thoughts on this game? What possibly this game could have been?
It was another example of the whole thing that I mentioned earlier, where you know you can extend this universe into other patches and other genres and other executions that just, you know, gets people excited and makes sense and still sells a great game. Because here we were, it probably wasn't going to involve Jedi. It probably wasn't going to involve a lot of the characters we see typically in all the big films. It might have involved Boba Fett, and that was obviously quite interesting. But even if it didn't, even if it was just a case of you almost are crafting a bounty hunter or some, you know, nameless bounty hunter.
That's even more interesting.
Yeah, in an underground area of Coruscant. That for me was the most interesting part of it. Like, seedy Star Wars. Like, come on, that sounds cool. And then you've got this whole element of almost, it's almost like, creating your own sort of backdoor version of Han Solo in that seedy underworld and having to figure out how to survive and how to push your agenda in this world. Because the thing is, we kind of forget that where the films often concentrate on all the core stuff, all the core stories at the top of the tree, and you know all the bigger players in the larger battles of the universe, there's lots of little things that happen underneath the surface, and Star Wars 1313 was that kind of game.
Yeah, I don't think the films do a great job of setting the scene on how this war has affected the people. I mean, all you see is soldiers. Yeah. You don't really see the town. Well, in the new one, you kind of see the towns, but it's in the middle of a desert. I mean, what are you gonna expect? but yeah, you don't really see how the economy is and stuff like that. And this looked like the game where it's showing you. I mean, we're going to talk about Mass Effect in a little bit, but I think Mass Effect does that really well, how war times affected certain parts of the city. I mean, the Citadel's all new and shiny, and then you end up going to new parts of the Citadel, old parts of the Citadel, and it's an utter shithole. Then you go to planets, and it's just run by criminals and stuff like that. You don't see that in Star Wars games, and this looked like the one where you were going to see. It was going to be Jabba Hutt's paradise. It was just going to be the underworld of Star Wars, and it was just so disappointing how I think that's pretty much lost. It looked like the perfect game to start off this new generation of Star Wars games under EA, but it's just not. I don't think it's going to get made. Which is sad.
No, that doesn't look like it. Doesn't look like it.
But we will move on to something that is getting made. Visceral have shown footage of their games at E3. I think in the last 2 years, they didn't really show much the year before, but this year they showed some behind the scenes, and I think they showed a little walking demo. But obviously, Visceral are famed for making some excellent games. What was it, Dead Space? Uncharted?
Yes.
The two Godfather games?
I don't know about Uncharted, but definitely the two Godfather games and Dead Space. And then you've got Battlefield Hardline, you've got Army of Two.
That's interesting.
So, mixed bag. Although Dead Space is certainly, the Dead Space trilogy is certainly a very good grounding to go back on.
I just remember that Uncharted's obviously Naughty Dog, so you know, whoever the video I watched of the footage is bullshitting me. I will link him. I'll link him on YouTube, so I'm not just being an idiot here. But yeah,
this
it's obviously Naughty
just
Dog.
Because you haven't played The Last of Us yet.
Not my fault. I'll get it after Christmas. It'll be cheaper.
This is true.
I have to get a good. No, I'm not getting in the controller debate. I'll have Sam Maguire tweeting me for the next 24 hours. But yeah, Visceral Games obviously made some great games. I think Dead Space is the one to focus on. I only played Dead Space 3, because I'm a little bitch and I don't like horror games. But Dead Space is probably one of the most gripping, intense experiences, and I only played 3, which is meant to be the light one in the series, which doesn't easily. Fill me with hope.
easily the I actually finished it 2 days ago. It's easily the most pleasant experience of the three.
Yeah, and and the lifts were terrifying in that game, especially the stupid circly ones in the snow. God, I hated that game and loved it at the same time. But yeah, Visceral Games. I don't think we have a title yet, so we'll just kind of talk about what we expect. So as we said, they make Dead Space, which is obviously fantastic. But it kind of looks like it. It kind of looks like a third-person, story-driven fighting game. So what do you expect from Visceral Games? Obviously, we've got the BioWare one that hasn't really had anything said about it yet. But what do you expect, Marco?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to derive stuff from the screenshots, yeah. I suppose. It kind of looks a little bit Dead Spacey in that there's clearly a third person perspective element, and I'm guessing there's either going to be a combination of a blaster or a lightsaber or something like that involved. Whether it's a sandbox, I'm not sure. Whether it's sort of a bit more of a linear style. That you know, very similar to Dead Space.
Yeah,
it remains to be seen. I think actually there is a gap for a sandbox type thing in from a Star Wars perspective, because typically even a Knights of the Old Republic or Jedi Outcast or Force Unleashed, you know stylistically all those games have always had very specific limitations within their world. They don't necessarily feel as open world as they might imply. But I think it would be interesting to see if they're gonna bring in elements of the way that if there's one nice thing that the Visceral did pretty well from Dead Space, which I'd love to see them bring in here, is that they've got a nice idea of the physics, because a lot of the physics in Dead Space are really, really good in terms of the way that you interact with your environment. Be nice to see if they can bring that in. But I think the most important thing actually is just a damn good story. And I guess it would be interesting to see if they choose to, just like we discussed earlier, are they going to retell the stories we've seen on film or a piece of it, or are they going to go somewhere different? I personally would love them to go somewhere different, just because, again, that's sort of my preference. But they may not feel that way. I don't know.
It seemed, well, I think on some of the trailers and gameplay demos or whatever you want to call it, or screenshots, it shows the banner of, I can't remember what the new faction's called.
That, oh yeah, that symbol. Yes, I'm
yes.
Trying to remember as well.
Is it new? Is it New Order?
Yes, I think it is. Wait.
I'm trying to think if that's Star Wars or if it's V for Vendetta.
No. There is I'm gonna live googling happening right now as we. Try and find it. It looks like it. Yeah.
I'm going to put elevator music.
Yeah, it sounds. But it's first order. There we
first
go.
Order.
The first order from the Force Awakens.
Yes.
Yeah. Which kind of would make sense.
Yeah, so it kind of look. It may just kind of be in the world of that film. So you kind of have the political and. Economic impact on the universe, but maybe you just have a sandbox experience in that universe, which I think is probably what would be best for me. Really, I agree that the sandbox thing is needed, and I'd like to. I wouldn't mind a linear game like Dead Space, but it's the Star Wars universe, and I don't want to be reliant on one BioWare game to have that experience. I'd like to have two. And I think Visceral would be very interesting to say. I mean, as you said, Dead Space is a fantastic story-driven trilogy. But the Godfather game, they delivered kind of a sandbox game where it was just fun. Obviously, it was set around the Godfather films, which it can kind of draw similarities with this. Obviously, you got two iconic cinema. Well. The third Godfather's a bit shit, but we'll call it trilogy. It was still good, but it wasn't as good as the other one. other ones. But yeah, it was kind
They can do open world.
Yeah. Where the Godfather film was literally just a game version of the film. It was literally scene by scene, which was fantastic. But I don't really want to see this with the Star Wars universe. But it kind of shows they can do a film adaptation into a game. But yeah, it's kind of hard to describe what we want to see, but it would be lovely to see a sandbox game, which is different from BioWare. Because I think we, at this stage, we all know what to expect by BioWare. And that is something that is fantastic and is rarely going to get matched. But, Marco, seeing as we've pretty much covered the Star Wars games, I mean, there's plenty of standouts over the years, but shall we move on to something else that EA has, that publishes and BioWare makes? Shall we move on to something that is fantastic?
Of course.
I think we should. I thought we might as well do two gaming parts to this pod, because I know Marco loves Mass Effect as much as I do. So I thought we'd do the second half of this pod on Mass Effect. So Marco, in terms of gaming trilogies, and it's going to have a fourth part soon, which may be unrelated, we don't really know at this stage. Is it right up there with the best?
I believe it is, because I think that you'd be hard-pressed to find a trilogy that consistently delivers across the board. I know people have got concerns about, you know, there's clunkiness with the first one, and there's some disappointing payoffs with the third one. But on the whole, when you look at the broader RPG experience that all three games offer you, it's really hard to find any RPG trilogy that does that. You'd probably have to compare to things, you know, works of art like The Witcher. And even then, I'd argue The Witcher can't hold up as a whole.
Two did not grab you, The Witcher 2. Yeah. But I think the only one I could think of that may compete with it is BioShock.
Yes, but funny enough, you then have to sort of, like, there's that whole debate about the fact, you know, BioShock 2 was, you know, different people, and even though it's actually a really, really good game in its own right, there's almost like a weird poor cousin element. let me put it this way. I'd say Mass Effect needs to be spoken about in the context of, like, maybe the Arkham trilogy. I think it's that good.
Oh, God. I forgot about that. I love the Arkham trilogy. That's for later, yeah, pod. We're doing that in, I don't want to break the news, but we're doing Batman later.
Awesome. But yeah, I think it's highly rated, because I think there's, you know, Mass Effect in particular. I mean, Knights of the Republic kind of showed people that BioWare can do RPGs, but the Mass Effect trilogy is sort of the trilogy that really solidified just how good they are, especially from a storytelling perspective, which is what makes Mass Effect so good. It's a really, really compelling story, and it's the kind of thing that is just, you feel like you're playing a space epic. And that's exactly what it is, and that's exactly what you should be feeling.
Yeah, for me, it's one of my favourites. But you brought up Arkham, so I don't want to discuss that. but yeah, Mass Effect is fantastic. I mean, for me, I didn't play the first one straight away. I can't remember when I got it. It was like the late stages of Xbox 360. It was before 3 came out. But I got 1 and 2 for like £8, and I played, I think I finished 1 in 2 days, and then Mass Effect 2 I actually took my time with, because it was that fantastic. I mean, Mass Effect 2 is in the conversation for best game. Mass Effect 2, just, if you haven't played that game, it's available on backwards compatibility for Xbox, and if you haven't got, I don't know if PlayStation has it, you can get it on computer, but if it's not available on PlayStation, sell that piece of crap, get an Xbox, and buy Mass Effect 2. but yeah.
Wow.
I'm making people go team at Xbox. But yeah. What's your favourite character from Mass Effect? Obviously, there's three huge games there with different casts, but is there any character that kind of grabs you? Maybe not Shepard. Let's count out Shepard, because he's kind of just you. But anyone who made that game better for you.
Oh, there's so many. And the problem is, that they're all so cool for different reasons. But I mean, like, okay, Garrus, for obvious reasons, because I think Garrus, more than anyone in that whole series, is the guy that almost, like, you know, whether you choose to enter into a relationship with him, or you choose to just sort of keep him as the really core brother sidekick, he fundamentally is so core to your path as the character of Shepard in the game. And he's also just a total badass. Miranda Lawson, there's no other reason I like her other than the fact that she looks like Yvonne Strahovski and was voiced by her. And she's kind of cute. The Elusive Man is one of the best villains I've ever come across. And I mean, just the whole concept of him, the way he was presented, the way he was sort of like that dynamic. He's one of the reasons Mass Effect 2 is such an exceptional game, because he's such an intriguing villain. Because you always know throughout that game you're working for a bad guy, and yet you're also working for a good cause. It's the ambiguity is awesome. Jeff Joker Moreau, who is brilliantly voiced by Seth Green. I mean, he's so funny, especially when he's busy sitting there flirting with, you know, his ship. And it's really quite funny that Edie ends up as this hot robot. That's quite funny. Erdnot Rex is just a proper badass
He's my guy.
He's very.
I like him in Free when he's not part of your group. That's why I like Rex. there is a choice that he isn't in Free. But we can't spoil it. We can't spoil it. I mean, it's years old.
Yeah.
If you don't want spoilers, just ignore this bit. Rex is, what is he, a Krogan? Obviously, he's a Krogan. There's a mission in 2 where there's a race called the Salarians where you can help wipe out the Krogans, who are a warmongering race that kind of they're trying to take over the world, aren't they? They're just warmongering monsters. And if you decide to destroy the Krogan race, Rex hates you. And I think he dies, doesn't he? I think you end up having to kill him. I didn't pick that option because I'm not a dick.
Correct.
He dies. So obviously in the third one, it kind of affects your experiences in the games. But do you want to talk about that? How all three link together? Obviously, in the first one, there's not loads of big decisions. Obviously, you have to pick between Ashley and what's his name?
Caden. Yeah.
And then in the second one, there's so many choices. It's scary. It's scary how many choices can have a knock-on effect that you don't think affect anything.
it's also the scale of them. One of the interesting things that I sort of try and do with the game, because of the fact that it allows this, is I try very hard to take a different approach with some of the key decisions in different playthroughs. So, for example, a character who, the last character I was going to mention, sort of as a favorite of mine, but one who I just so basically what happens is Morden Solus is really funny. He's a very funny Salarian, very offbeat, another memorable character from Mass Effect 2. There's a thread that you can pull on in Mass Effect 3 where you end up betraying him, and it is one of the most heartbreaking things I've played, because you feel like a total piece of, like, I mean, because it's one of the most incredible things about what this game does is it allows you to sort of almost either mirror your core belief structures or your core decisions, and then, you know, I think typically that's how everyone plays this game the first time. They'll do what they would do in real life, if Mass Effect was real. But then in other playthroughs, I'm like, okay, well, now I'm going to be not me. I'm going to try and be like a total nasty guy and just not do that and betray people and just see what happens. And wow, sometimes you get more than you bargain for, and betraying Morden Solus, betraying Erdnot Rex, it's heavy. And even though not necessarily my favorite moments from the game, they're very powerful moments, and it's fantastic that the game allows that thread to be pulled, because that's why Mass Effect 2 in particular is such a good game, because you end up really developing strong relationships with each of these characters, so that when you lose them or when they're threatened or in danger, you do feel a sense of personal responsibility. You do take up that role to make sure that they're going to be okay, or that their sacrifice is not somehow sort of at random or in vain. So it's really awesome how they structure that.
Big question is, Marco, the first time you played 2, how many people did you save on the first ending?
So ironically, I'm picking on Morden here, but I mean, this is the funny thing. I can't remember what item or thing it is that I didn't pick up, but I only lost one person, and that was Morden Solis. And I was furious because, like, why did I lose one? Like, at least we lose like 3. I mean, 3 is like, okay, I messed up a lot, but like to lose one, it's kind of like implies, oh damn, I was so close. But the thing is, he was so funny. I was almost like, no man, come on, get rid of like the tattooed, sort of grumpy, angry chick or the boring Talia. Robot. You know, no,
Talia,
why did
nobody
that?
Nobody cared about Talia.
Yeah. Agreed.
I think I lost about 3 or 4. I mean, that sequence where you're losing people or nearly losing people, it's the most heartbreaking or tense moment in gaming history. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. It's just so bad. It's so bad for the heart. I mean, I couldn't take it if I didn't know what was going to happen. But I think that made me play it again and get the right ending. Because 1, I wanted the achievement, and 2, I was not leaving no man behind. Morden survived, though. I sent him back with the first survivors once you get off the ship, and he survived.
Nice.
He survived.
Yeah, I don't think I did that. I did something completely not that.
I think Miranda survived, which was important because Shepard's got to get some. He's got to get some. It's true. He's got to get some. What was he called? Was it Jackson? What was the bloke called?
Jacob Taylor.
Yes, he died. He died a painful death. He wanted that suicide mission so bad I'd given him. Yeah, he died. But we'll move on from the endings because... we'll move on from the ending of 2. We still have to discuss 3, which is a bad point. But before that, we'll have a favourite moment thing. What are your favourite moments in the trilogy?
It's really hard to pick out because, I mean, like there's so many different moments of humour and there's so many different moments of massive significance. I really enjoyed the suicide mission from start to finish because of the fact that it just, you know, it really felt like there was a great payoff in the way that the game built up to that moment and how it delivered it, and that was obviously quite powerful. One of the best reveals in the game, though, for me, and probably is my favorite moment. Again, I want to bring it back to the elusive man. I've never encountered a villain like that before up to that point. Because
shout out to Martin Freeman for that.
Martin Sheen. But that's the thing, right? Like, and that's the awesome production value of this thing. You know, real, proper, fantastic Hollywood A-list type talent involved here. And Martin Sheen managed to create a character who not only was ambiguous in the moral standpoints that you're sort of trying to figure out, but more importantly, you're like, half of you agrees with him. Half of you starts thinking about, you know, sort of the threads he's pulling from a storytelling perspective, and you're almost keen on trying to see, you know, what his point of view is. And that's what makes him such an interesting and compelling villain. Obviously, he goes very almost extreme to one side in Mass Effect 3, so it kind of makes it a bit easier to stand against him. But in Mass Effect 2, it feels so interesting to every single time you encounter that guy.
Yeah, I think in terms of video game villains, I mean, in terms of one who you don't directly fight, he's just there. I mean, you work for him for more. And it's all about the bigger picture, and it kind of leads on to 3 perfectly. But yes. For me, I think it's number two, where the Salarian's giving a speech about holding the line. I love that scene. It was so passionate.
Yes, I remember that. Yes, of course, I remember that. I remember that. That was so cool. That was so cool. It's got like a war set piece almost to it.
Yeah, it was something out of a film. It was fantastic. And I think that's actually entered my own vocabulary. I think my mate, who obviously plays Mass Effect as well, he knows when you say hold the line. He knows what that means. You do not lose that line. but we'll have to touch on the sour note that is Mass Effect 3's ending. But firstly, I'd like to say that Mass Effect 3 actually is a very good game. It's just got a weirdly weird ending. I mean, just to set the scene, you've got four or five options in this weird thing where you decide the fate of the universe. And you've got this, what does the little kid represents fate or something like that, doesn't he? Or some stupid thing?
I've got to remember now. He almost represents like the I don't know. I suppose to a large extent, the higher power in the universe,
the natural and balance of the universe, or some bullshit. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. It's weird. Basically, there's this spectral little kid who's narrating your choices, and it's like you can destroy technology, you can befriend technology, or you can get controlled by it or something like that. It's weird.
So synthesis annihilating them or trying to control them.
It's like, yeah, you have destroyed control, or you kind of just get both equal rights or something. It's weird.
And you can also walk away.
Then you can either shoot the kid.
You can walk away
or you can shoot the kid.
And yeah,
he gets pissed off. and then it was, as we said, Mass Effect's up there with the best trilogy. But for an ending, is this possibly one of the most disappointing things ever? Obviously, they tried to fix it later on, but a crappy little cinematic where all three of the ending, or the three main endings, are basically the same. It's not great, is it?
So I mean, and maybe this is just sort of the way my playthrough ended up.
Mm.
Mine kind of, just because of the way that I'd gone through, it made almost a fair amount of sense for me to go with the synthesis ending in respect of how it all tied together.
Yeah.
But particularly because, my first playthrough, I'd been pretty sympathetic to the Geth and to, anything sort of AI related. I hadn't been sort of as much of, yeah. However, I think the three weaknesses in the ending come from the fact that, one, you don't really have this big epic boss battle, which almost feels like it needed to be there, especially considering that, especially in Mass Effect, in the first one and the second one, there is that dramatic end battle that sort of brings it together and pays that off. It doesn't feel satisfying in respect of the whole journey to that point, and it almost feels a little bit like there was this a meaningless non-point to it. I kind of felt like in The Matrix Revolutions. I don't know if you remember that film. You get to the end point, and the architect, between the architect and Agent Smith, you're kind of like, listen, there's no point. You can't beat this. Blah blah blah. And somehow you've got to find that alternate route that sort of, you know, brings in the right ending from left field. And it's almost like Mass Effect 3 needed that ending. Not necessarily saying that the Revolution's any work, but the point is, exactly as you say, it almost felt like there needed to be some way of saying, no, you know what, where's the ending that allows you to destroy without, I mean, some might argue destroying without consequences might not necessarily be correct given the whole theme of the universe. but it just felt like it you were kind of boxed in by what the ending was trying to say to you. And the big thing is, because like for me, the big thing I think they were trying to say with the ending is that there's this larger sacrifice that Shepard's going to make for the universe. And that kind of gets lost. And I also don't know if that's what the fans wanted. I guess what's interesting is actually the fans really had that very passionate voice. And because of that fan pressure, BioWare went and created the extended cut, changed the endings a bit, expanded the endings a bit, to try and respond to that.
And it still wasn't great at the end, and even with the extension, it was still all a bit samey. But I kind of see why they went that route, because the whole, well, one of the main premises of Mass Effect is your choices have a huge impact on the universe, and your choices of, like, you can wipe out a race. I mean, you can wipe out two races, obviously. I think in one you can wipe out that ancient races of the insect people, which you don't really see.
Yes.
But yeah, I kind of see why they did it, but I think they needed to have a kind of a set ending, not one that you could choose, but one your choices lead to an ending, not one that you can choose. Like, if people have played The Witcher, obviously you get three definitive endings with little things differing now and again. But I don't want to spoil The Witcher because I'm not that evil a person, but basically how you treat someone impacts the ending of the game, and you get the ending you're given. You don't need to choose your ending, and I think that's what Mass Effect needed. I think it just needed one that was, oh, you've done this, this is your ending. I think that's what it's needed. But we'll see with the new one how the universe has been affected. But Mass Effect Andromeda, it seems to be moving away from the Shepard trilogy, or I hope it is. But Marco, what have you been impressed with what you've seen? If you have seen anything of it, I know we both love the trilogy. Have you been keeping up with the gameplay demos and trailers and stuff that have came out?
I've kept up with some of them. The weakness of the trailers, I suppose, is the fact that we haven't got any sign or any signal of, you know, what are the compelling other characters that you're hopefully going to be building up relationships with.
Mm.
And I kind of feel like that's got to be a core thing that they maintain in the Mass Effect universe, because make no mistake, what makes Mass Effect interesting is the journey. And the journey is only made interesting by interacting with people like Garrus and like Morden and like Rex and other off-the-wall characters like Zaid Masani or Kasumi Goto, or, you know, all these other cool characters that you sort of bring along the way. It sounds like they're going to sort of take it to, I think it's set about a few years after the end of 3.
I believe so. Yeah.
A few more than a few. 600 years. I've just looked it up. I think what'll be interesting is how much they retain in terms of the formula and how much new stuff they bring in. And I think that's probably going to be the biggest challenge that they have with this game, is that, you know, the core tenets of being able to level up leveling up system, obviously they need to retain and build on, which is very cool. I'd like to see more weapon customization, because I think it's always been a weakness when you compare it to other RPGs. I'd love them to bring in a crafting system, because I think that's something Mass Effect would actually benefit from. But the core stuff, relationships, the core stuff, great storytelling. It's that new stuff. Like, how do they sort of take the genre a few leaps forward? Because if you look at it, role playing games aren't kind of very different now from, I mean, they're bigger and more layered and more complex, yes, and they're longer but it's all a little bit like even take The Witcher 3, which I haven't, you know, sort of yet delved into deeply, but as good as it is, it's also kind of, you know, a really, really, really good story behind a gameplay setup of Skyrim, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You know, it's just a huge Skyrim if you think about it. But look, I mean, either way, I am excited. It is still something I'm going to play regardless. I just hope they keep the the core stuff that works.
Mm. It's almost like if it wasn't called Mass Effect, you know, it'd basically have the same friend system that you see in Dragon Age and Mass Effect, where your group is so important to the story. I recently, a few months ago, I finished Dragon Age Inquisition, which is obviously BioWare again. That is a fantastic game. But yeah, anything in BioWare does seems to be gold dust, especially with the two big franchises they got, which is Dragon Age and Mass Effect. And obviously we talked about Star Wars, Knights of the Old Republic as well. But yeah, they seem to have defined the combat a bit more. I mean, do you know in the first three, if you wanted to use technology, you were Vanguard, but you still pretty much, you just used guns, basically. It was just all the same stuff, but you just had different stats, but you weren't forced to do anything. It seems from the newest gameplay footage that they're trying to make you want to use, like, technology and explosions, and it's not magic. It's, like, it's crazy stuff, isn't it? But yeah, it seems to be defining the roles more, which is better. And hopefully the character customization's a bit better, as you said. I mean, if I want to play as a sniper, I want perks for playing as a sniper, and so on and so forth. But yeah, it seems to be... I think there's not many details confirmed about it. That is that you either play as the brother or sister in the story, and the other... sibling plays a part in the story, and you're called the Pathfinder, I believe. And it seems like your job is to find a new home for the human race, which sounds pretty, pretty goddamn awesome. It sounds like what No Man's Sky should have been. but yeah, Andromeda, it's coming out in March. I can't remember. I think it's March 30th or something like that. I should really check this, but anyway, screw it. but yeah, it's coming out in March, I think. And anyone who's not played Mass Effect and is kind of intrigued, just try and play through the trilogy before the new one comes out. It's a trilogy that deserves to be played, and it's definitely up there, and hopefully we haven't
at the very least play two, because I mean, yes. Mass Effect 2 as a standalone sort of game, yes, fair enough, you might lose a couple of details, but there's something incredibly compelling in how that story comes alive and the experience of it.
Basically, it kind of explains that the world doesn't like humans, and then it's basically about fixing the human relationship with other worlds and stuff like that. And then there's some asshole who betrays the council of aliens or whatever. It's interesting, but I mean, if you get in the lifts on Mass Effect 1 are enough to not play that game. The lifts on that game, you were stuck in for about 10 minutes as a loading screen. or elevators to Americans and whoever uses that term, but Jesus. Elevators and lifts on the first one are bad. But yeah, as you said, Marco, number two. Just play number two. It's enough. It's enough. And I think we got to give away the ending to three. But number two, the suicide mission, we didn't do it justice. You can only experience that by playing that mission. It's fantastic.
I agree.
That's all I've got on the agenda, Marco. Any plugs from you?
Well, I'm just sort of... obviously, check out the main Anvil Index pod, because between myself and Kate and Kareem, we host that alternate weeks, and we're trying to obviously keep things interesting as our beloved football team continues to impress us. Yes, fair enough, one or two mixed results of late, but I mean, still, it's they are sitting in second place at the time of speaking now, so that's not exactly unimpressive. I also want to give a shout out to the AI Comic guys for the year-end awards wrap-up. Please vote in the polls, and please listen to the episode before you do, so that you can listen to my argument and then vote for all mine.
He picks Deadpool in most of them. You'll get it right.
That's exactly what I did.
Yeah. just pick Deadpool and you had to get Doc Strange a couple of times, so it's you got a mixed bag there. I listened to like half of it this afternoon when it was blowing a gasket out, blowing like a tornado outside walking my dog. So it was distracting as I was trying to hold onto my hat listening to you three talk about all your award ceremonies. I haven't watched Walking Dead. I fell out with that series a long time ago.
I get it. I guess I've got a lot more patience for the show, but I do get if people walk away from it. Funny enough, pardon the pun.
Yes, I will revisit it at some point. I mean, is it Negan who's came in? He seems like he's given it a new lease on life, the show. So I may have to watch back up to that bit. But yeah, check out the comic pod. It's fantastic. Stu and Rory cool. Do a fantastic job, and Marco on this week's award show was fantastic.
Thank you.
But yeah, pods for, plugs from me. As you know, I've replaced Kalon as the AI pod whore. We discussed that on the post-match face-off. I'll be everywhere. I think I did an Academy this week. That came out today. I was on face-off after the Everton game. I was filling in for the Everton fan. I wasn't allowed to act like an Everton fan, which disappointed me. but yeah, I'm on two pods, and I imagine I'll be on some in the coming days. But yeah, I'd just like to say a big thank you for joining me, Marco.
Pleasure. This is all, both these series are massively pardon that pun, important to me, and just, you know, these are just some of the best games I've played, and really just like I want to encourage anyone who hasn't played them, play them. And play one more gem, Republic Commander. If you haven't played Republic Commander, it's a gem. It's an absolute gem. Play that Star Wars game. It's very cool.
Good stuff. And to everyone who's listened this year, obviously we've only just recently started this new journey of video games, and I've written a couple of articles in the new year. I promise I will write more. And I know many people don't read them, but I will write more. I need them for me more than you. I need to build my portfolio of stuff. And you never know. Trev Dowdy might write them with the new AI Audible, which is fantastic idea.
Mm-hmm.
Just check that out. And just finally, we may be releasing this after Christmas, but hope you all had a good Christmas/Merry Christmas, and I hope you all have a fantastic New Year, and we'll be back in the New Year discussing, I reckon we should do our own award ceremony on the games of 2016. I think that'll be the next pod. But thanks for listening, everybody. Happy holidays. Goodbye.
Cheers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.